Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Patriot Come Lately Show. This is Stefan, your Patriot Come Lately, the voice of the Second American Revolution. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whenever or wherever you are listening. As someone who came to America to escape from the socialist nightmare, I am using this show to shake America awake. Join me in the next hour for constitutional conservative news and views, as well as the occasional guest. We have to rebuild that shining city on the hill by taking this great country back to the principles set forth by the founders.
And this is Patrick Come Lately. I've come back in. I'm having some technical problems here on the internet, so unable to get a connection via my normal connection, and I'm going to have to play around with some things here and find out what's going on. I was hoping to have my guest on shortly. It looks as if that's not going to happen. So, interesting to see what will be going on here. My apologies. Now, I did make a quick reference there to Newt not being very successful, unfortunately, in Florida. Oh, it looks like the internet is working. So the big question is, why am I not able to? Why am I not able to connect here? Okay. Sometimes just when you need it, the technology. Here we go. And I'm going to go straight to my guest because I see you've been waiting a while. Is that Mike Hewitt?
Yes, it is, Stefan.
Okay, Mike, thank you for coming on, and sorry, I had a little bit of a problem with the internet. I'm in a hotel here, and it looks like the internet dropped for a while, but it looks like I'm back in, so I'm glad to say. So sorry about that. I didn't even have a chance to introduce you hopefully you hear me, do you, Mike? That's good, and hopefully it's coming through to Blog Talk Radio now.
Yep, I'm hearing you very well, Stefan, and technology is wonderful, but it always provides some challenges along the path.
Yeah, and I've been spoiled. I've not actually had any technical problems for quite a while, so, of course, it had to happen tonight. So I didn't have an opportunity to introduce you, Mike, so let me go ahead and ask you, perhaps you would like to introduce yourself. I know you're, amongst other things, we're going to talk about your being an author, but first of all, you're also a Tea Party activist. Is that correct?
That is correct. Just a brief introduction, Stefan. My name is Mike Hewitt, and as you point out, I'm an author, and I've been a political activist for the better part of 20 years or so. And along the path, I've certainly found myself immersed in the Tea Party movement and very, very excited about it.
Well, that's great. What drew you to the Tea Party? I mean, what was your political activism earlier?
Well, I can tell you, I accidentally stumbled on the Tea Party on Tax Day a couple years ago when there kind of this was just like a natural effervescent movement. All of a sudden, people started coming together in front of courthouses. And I literally passed by a group out in front of our courthouse in Grand Haven, Michigan, and got out, met some people, knew some people, and as it turned out, that was the first day of a public demonstration by the Tea Party. And since then, I'm now a former chair, but I did chair the local Tea Party in my community for a year, and I'm also the chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus of Michigan, which is what I like to affectionately refer to as the original Tea Party, because we've been talking limited government, getting our government under control from the RLC level since the early 1990s.
Oh, okay. So let's move on from there then. That's sort of your background. You said you're an author. Is this the first book you've written, or have you written other books?
You know, this is the first book I've written, Stefan. I've written countless opinion pieces on the internet for various various groups and internet blogs, et cetera, spanning a number of years, and finally challenged myself to ask, can I take the knowledge that I've got in some kind of entertaining fashion that would pose the question of what's at the end of the path we're on right now if we don't steer hard right or steer hard in some direction that's different than where we're going. And that's the book that we're talking about today.
Well, and then I think I'd mentioned to you when I invited you, Mike, I had a similar idea. My show last week was sort of very similar premise, you know, what might happen if we don't turn right or even hard right. I have to say, though, and we'll get to the why don't we get to the book first, and then I'll I think the people will hear that, you know, there are some differences. We kind of approached it differently, and I think yours went in some ways a little further, but yours ended perhaps a little more positive than mine did. So why didn't you tell the listeners the basic thread of the book, without giving away too much, of course.
Yeah, I think the basic thread of it is, I don't know, Stefan, if you ended up with the cover, because I think you're reading a digital version, but just as an example on the cover of the book, first off, the title of the book is America's Final Beginning, and the subtitle to it is An American Coup, or An American Coup, A Second War for Independence. And the premise of the book asks, what would happen in America if we put to a vote the notion of having America become a charter member of a global socialist authority? And it's my belief right now that the vote would be a lot closer than we might want to think about. This particular book, my novel, is set in 2029, and it's the result of me taking a handful of what I like to call liberty trends, and starting from the Civil War coming forward, saying where do these lines cross, and that's how I arrived at the date. It's got some science fiction aspects to it, but I got to tell you, I strained hard not to make it science fiction. Political fiction, originally the title said speculative fiction, but is it really? If that gives you a little bit of an idea.
I would agree with that. I think speculative fiction, because I think a lot of the basic premise, is very doable. As I was going to say, I think in some ways your premise moved a lot quicker than I did in my show. I think by the time 2029 came around, I think I ended up with Eric Holder being president and basically making himself president for life, like Hugo Chavez. But
sure.
you actually extended, again, you know, slap me on the wrist if I'm letting too much out of the bag of the book, but you let yours expand to a bit more of a global type situation, and I think works very well for the ending of the book, by the way. I think you're right on there. That to me is, while it is kind of speculative, I can see that ending happening very, very much.
You have to wonder how the American population, right now we're, hating to be cliche, Stefan, but right now we're a victim of our own success. And so we've gotten a culture that, for instance, we have a tendency now to shun or ridicule, mock our very best, and embrace the least of our society. And when you pause and say, what can a weakened society amount to? And it gets questionable. But if you set all of the social aspects of it aside, look to our political front, and just as an example today while we're talking, you have Romney winning in Florida. And not to take that up, but it really works to the novel in as much as I consider Romney a globalist. The things that he invested in, where his funds went, those are the kind of, he's the kind of person that doesn't have America first. He sees a far, far greater vision than what I do. I tend to be a nationalist, and I'm an unapologetic nationalist. He isn't. He's the opposite.
Exactly, and that's one of the reasons why I have, I think, you know, on Facebook, but also here on the show, have been fairly obvious that I'm not really very much in favor of milquetoast meat, and was hoping that Gingrich might have done better, but at a certain point, it seems money talks, and, you know, we haven't found a constitutional way to make sure that money doesn't talk, unfortunately. And I think it's a very difficult issue to try and resolve, but I wish there were a good way to do it.
I do. One of the reoccurring themes you might have noticed when you were just paging through the book that I wrote, to me, one of the greatest challenges that face America isn't the left or the right or what's going on in D.C. or in our state capitals, but rather the apathy of the public. And, you know, I once ran for state office for the State House of Representatives back a few years ago. And one of the things that really kind of helped spawn this novel from my vantage point was I did very well. It was an eight-way primary. I didn't win, but I placed well. What really stunned me, though, was the complete apathy on the part of the citizenry. And I think that's our number one obstacle. People don't understand what's going on, but worse than that, they don't care that they don't understand. I find that fearsome and providing a dangerous future for us.
Yeah, and what always surprises me is that with all the discourse, all the discussions going on right now about, first of all, about the GOP candidates themselves, which you would think would engender some interest, but also when we come to the general election with everything going on and you sort of say, well, you know, don't people see, or if they, even if they do see and they sort of say they agree with what King Barry is doing, but, you know, still the percentage of people that actually end up voting in the general election is just such a low number, you sort of say, you know, in a way, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it is. And if you look at primary politics, just as a leader up to that, the number one reason that people don't vote in primary politics is that they resent being forced to choose between parties, which is just kind of a statement for education, because that's what a primary is for. And if you, most of the media, when they report, they report to registered voter turnout, mostly always shying away from the eligible voter turnout, which is just dismal. And that's how we can have a fellow like Mitt Romney, who has said exactly opposite of everything he's saying in this campaign, and everybody's nodding up and down like Cheshire cats. That's, to me, is an educational crisis. But sadly, I mean, I'm not necessarily a huge Abe Lincoln fan, but Abe Lincoln, I'd have to paraphrase him, but he said it best when he said that the philosophy that's being taught in our school system today will be in our government tomorrow. And that's what we've seen. We look at each decade, and it's a little bit worse, but it's from the seeds of that statement where the truth is found.
Well, I prefer to make a different analogy, and, of course, I know that here in America it's a little more sensitive, but I like to use one of a certain German person of the 1930s who said, "Wer hat die Kinder, hat die Zukunft." He who has the children has the future, which is kind of, you know, it aligns with what Lincoln said. But the same thing, you know, take over the kids and you get the future. And so I think, you know, stories like yours, stories like mine, I think for both of us, we both in a way, started with the premise that this 2012 election, you know, people were apathetic and basically started to let things happen that shouldn't. And as I said, yours developed a little differently, mine did, but that the end result, in a way, was very similar, that really the progressives, and I prefer to use that term, you know, rather than liberals, which is not really what we should be calling them, and not the Democrats really either, because I think it really is a different group that are doing there, and then they just sort of taking over, and once they get their hooks in, it's going to be very difficult to get them out, and something yeah. extreme like in your book. And quick question on the book. It's
sure.
called America's Beginning. Do you know when it is likely to be published? Well, America's
right
Final
now,
Beginning.
Right now, America's Final Beginning is in pre-launch. It is currently available at Barnes & Noble online, and Amazon.com has got it available online. In fact, it's kind of interesting that when we're talking about pre-launches, Stefan, is when I Google the title now, comes up with 5 pages of listings all over the world, and makes me kind of laugh to see that, especially since you've briefed through the book, you'll know, but it's listed in China, it's listed in Japan, it's listed in France, in Denmark, in Sweden, in Russia, several listings in Russia. I found that kind of fascinating. But it went into pre-launch a week ago, and the actual launch date, I'll be doing a signing in Grand Rapids somewhere during the month of March. And with that will go the marketing campaign, et cetera, that goes behind it.
Okay, well, so let's go back to, like I said, the kind of the storyline of the book, if we may. And I started off with a little bit sort of the apathy of the American people. And like I said, I went off in one direction. Do you want to just chat a little bit and say, you know, at a very high level, what happens in your book, and then kind of develop it and point it in the direction that we're going to end up, like I said, a little more positive than my story last week?
Absolutely. From my standpoint, in fact, it's kind of, let me dovetail for a second. When I finished this book, I had this pent-up energy from having been working and writing at the same time. So I was really torn between writing a sequel and a prequel, and I'm several chapters now into a prequel to try to get everyone to understand what happens between now, right where we're at today, and the point where this book starts out. But the very okay. opening of the book is my hero is Miles Carlson, and we find him in a very desolate, devastated Manhattan Island in New York. And from there, he ends up inevitably coming in contact with Free States Militia and inevitably a Continental Army, which is being mounted by a deposed president of the United States, who, interestingly, used to have been a socialist, and now that he found out what socialism really means, he's trying to win back his nation.
Yeah. And you know, as you said, it's a very bleak situation there. There's virtually no power. There's no food. There are riots. I mean, it really is a bad situation. But if you look at, you know, even countries like Argentina, where they had sort of economic problems, and you know, not far fetched by any means.
No, one of the things I did look at Argentina. I looked at a number of societies that collapse, which is really what my book is talking about. It's talking about a financial collapse and an American political defeat. And so I looked at history to say, what's happened when this has taken place in other countries? And just like you'll see in my book when you breathe through it, there was a period of time right after the collapse where they were having technology and toys, and the normal things that get stolen were being thieved and stores broken into. But it doesn't take society long to understand that without society, those things have no value. And so the only thing worth dying for or risking life and limb for is food and survival. And that's kind of where the book begins.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, I'm going to take a quick break here. I'd mentioned in my email to you, you know, I do run a couple of commercials. They don't pay
Very
a lot,
nice.
But, you know, every penny helps towards this. So if you don't mind, just hang on there for a moment or two, and then we will be back shortly.
Perfect.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom114.com. Get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom114.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 114.com. Freedom114.com. And start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hello, everybody. Doc Weiss here, host of the Conservative Underground Show and member of the Red State Talk Radio Network with this week's Conservative Minute. The polish on the Obama dream machine has worn off. The emperor is naked. He is a fraud and a true Manchurian candidate. The State of the Union speech last week was a shining example at the shallowness of this administration and the man himself. Government program after government program recycled and repackaged, served up as solutions to our current national malaise of his own doing. Class warfare, divide and conquer. That is this president's re-election strategy, and we saw it in plain sight last Tuesday. The time is now, my friends, to take back this republic, to reawaken this economic giant and get government off our backs and back within the consent of the governed. No, we do not need more government, more debt, more spending, more taxes. We need less, and we need a real leader in the White House, not a community organizer whose socialist views are bankrupting this great nation before our very eyes. Join me on the Conservative Underground every Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live on blogtalkradio.com.
This is the Patriot Come Lately Show, coming to you on the Internet via Blog Talk Radio. Also available via WRS Digital, the Red State Talk Radio Network at redstatetalkradio.com.
And we're back. Thank you for staying with us through the break. I have my guest, Mike Hewitt, author of America's Final Beginning, a novel about what could happen if we let the progressives take over and take us further down the path that they would like to take us. And we were talking about some of the political things before the break. Mike, why don't we have a quick touch on, and you said you didn't really want to have it as a science fiction, but we are, you go into the future, 2029, and you have some pretty interesting weapons that get involved there. Do you know someone in the military, and you know something that we don't know, or did you dream up yourself? Very good imagination if you did.
Stefan, it may be a little bit of a combination of a good imagination, but really coupled with a lot of research. What I really wanted to do, again, I stress I didn't want to write a science fiction, but I can't write the future without having to wrestle with the idea of what will technology be like. And because we're engaged in my story in a civil war / war for independence, which was, irony being what it is a lot like our first war for independence. But when I'm wrestling with that, you say, okay, what weapons would we use? And that caused me to spend a lot of time doing a lot of reading. And, I used to get teased during that period of time because I would research for 3 or 4 nights to write a paragraph. And if you looked at the paragraph, you'd think, that's not really profound. But I wanted to make sure that what I was addressing was feasible. So everything that I put in the book, our sciences that are right now unfolding. And it's me saying, if this is where we're at now, this is where I think that particular science will be then.
Yeah. Oh, no, and I have to say, you know, as a reader, it is, yes, it is easier to say, well, yeah, might we get there? But as you said, it's feasible, you know, and if not in 2029, maybe in 2040 or 2050, but it's the sort of thing that you say would be very feasible to have. And then, of course, you know, if you add that to, and there are lots of, you know, there is one main weapon system in there that I found very interesting, right? The if I can use the name, the RAPs or the Raptors, that was a very interesting one.
Sure. I think
you have lots of other. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, from the people that have commented back to me after reading it, I think the Raptor drew most of the attention. And the irony to that is that it seems so surreal, but the truth of it is that it already exists. And so the exterior material is certainly different, but the technology is, for all practical purposes, it's in place. So mm-hmm. I wasn't reaching.
No. But also, and there are other ones, a lot of, space-based weapons get involved, etc., and as you said, very believable, very, very possible, and, just definitely adds to the book. Of course, what you also see, and I think that's interesting, that because of the total collapse, that while some people and some weapons still work, how much of the other, I would say, day-to-day infrastructure has totally gone away? You talk in the book about bicycles and horses and things, and basically normal automobiles, etc. Just totally gone. Again, very very plausible if everything collapses, then where are we going to have the gas? We won't have the gas. How are we going to get around? It will be make things very difficult.
Yeah, it would change our society. And it's really, when I was writing stuff, and it was kind of intriguing to imagine the impact it would have on different communities. And I'm sure you took notes. So when we were talking about Philadelphia or New York, large communities or centers of population, where their dependence on being served the staples of life is so different than a group of people that are living in central Kentucky out in the middle of the woods. And so the loss of technology, if you think about losing electricity, it casts us back to the Civil War era in terms of technology. And how it impacts different segments of our society was really a fascinating thing to try to analyze.
Oh yeah, I agree. And what struck me, because it's only sort of in the middle of the book where you get to that, where you really see that dichotomy, because initially it all starts off in the big cities, and then but when you get to that middle part of the book, you suddenly realize, oh yeah, those while things are bad, they're actually not quite as bad as they are actually in the big cities. And that sort of, in a way, I find that's one of the things that gives hope, and I think that's possibly what you were trying to do. It gives hope that not everything is going to collapse in something like that. That a lot of people will actually be able to continue, not like they are today, but at a reasonable level.
Well, one of the things I found, Stefan, when I was writing this book, is if you take a trip to, just to be cliche again, if you take a trip to Blockbuster and you walk around the big square looking at the new releases, by the time you've made it all the way around, you will have been absolutely immersed in horror movies, in cataclysmic ends, and especially hard left socialism. And So you mentioned the word hope a few times, and I really wanted to make this book inspirational. The idea isn't for me to say America's going to die and be dead, and that's the end of the story, which is why I titled it America's Final Beginning. So for me, it was important to find some inspiration. I think there's plenty of reason to be hopeful for the future, but I think there's a big chasm between where we're at and getting there, which is what the book tries to address.
And yeah, and I think in that respect, and like I said, my story last week was a lot less positive, or ended a lot less positive than yours. It was sort of, you know, we start going down a path and we end up somewhere and it sort of stays there. What I liked about your book, I think, you know, if I can describe it this way, America has a wake-up call. And a number of people realize, I think initially they think they can't do anything, but then, you know, piece by piece, more people start realizing that they can do something and something positive happens. And that's something I really liked about the book, that, you know, this story of not just the fact that, you know, you had some very sophisticated weapons, but it was really the fact that people started coming together and saying, you know, I would never have really done this by myself, but knowing that there are others, let's do something. And that's really good. And you see, you know, some of your characters who come in and don't really want to do something initially, but as they see that it needs to be done, sort of say, let's go forward. And that, to me, is very much the spirit of the first American Revolution, of people sort of saying, we don't really have a choice. We have to do this, not just for ourselves, but also for our children, grandchildren, and the country as a whole.
And it's funny because in the end, I've got four daughters and working towards 9 grandchildren. And what motivates me is the inspiration. I don't want them to have the kind of future that my prediction, the first half of the book, suggests. So yeah. I guess I still have a lot of faith in the American spirit. I genuinely believe in that concept of the American spirit. So even while I'm lamenting about voter turnout, I mentioned that we're a victim of our success, and I believe that we need a good, hard thumping on the nose for us to be able to see through the eyes of our founding fathers again. That's what the book tries to do.
Yeah, and that certainly comes through. And, I think let's say my first part of my story, which was the fact that, yes, because of Milquetoast Mitt, doing well in Florida and probably going on to do well, during the rest of the primary, that a certain amount of apathy will set in on the right, and that could lead to another reign of King Barry. And as Rush says, you know, If he comes in for a second term and basically he knows it's his last term, so he'll just sort of, you know, just open the tap there and just do whatever he can. I mean, who cares?
When you look at that potential general election, Stefan, you've got Obama with over $1 billion that he's going to pour over the top of probably Romney. And what he's going to be talking about is all of the conflicting positions that Romney has taken, and some of them bold-faced lies. But even if I set all of that aside and try to pretend it doesn't exist, I have to pause and ask myself, can we really beat Obama from the left? And if we do, why bother? I mean, that's my problem with Romney. I see him as a very very articulate socialist. Well, we already have one of them in the office. So now I'm splitting hairs. I say, okay, one's incompetent and the other one's competent. Do I really want a competent socialist in the White House? So in other words, bottom line for me is that Romney is very problematic. When I look at the slate entirely, I don't see a president in the bunch. Having said that, I have endorsed Newt.
I've mentioned the delay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I said I mentioned the delay, and sometimes that makes me interrupt. But you finish off your train of thought, please, Mike. I'm sorry.
Well, one of the things I always hesitate to say, but when I look at the slate, I mean, I'm choosing the lesser of evils again. I tend to be a non-interventionist, and sadly, Ron Paul is utterly, completely made non-interventionism. The policies of our founding fathers sounds like a defense for those who have declared us their enemy. That's not rational. When I look at Rick, he hasn't done what he says he'll do. I have a problem with that. And so even though I realize that Newt is a little bit of a bomb thrower, I kind of half like that fact that he's willing to make the acclaim. I mean, I've said all along, imagine a society of America where quoting a founding father makes you a radical. Who would have ever thought that?
Yeah. And not just a radical, can even have you put on the list as a possible terrorist. And, you know, that for me is definitely frightening. So, you know, I know, I think the last week's show, I probably am on a list somewhere because I was, you know, not very nice at all about the current administration. So, but no, I agree with you. And I think in that respect, I think you and I kind of think along the same lines there. We don't have anybody who really stands out, but, you know, if I look back and you look back at the people that have kind of risen to the top and fallen back, and why did they rise to the top? I mean, for example, Trump, why did everybody seem to be so enamored of Trump? Because Trump was prepared to stand up and kind of shake things up and stand up to folks. And Gingrich seems to be doing that. And when he did that in South Carolina, he did very well there. And I think a lot of people on the conservative or even the classical liberal side are looking for something like that, as opposed to again another moderate. And you know, we had a moderate in 2008. Look where that got us.
Well, I think Romney is going to be a repeat of the McCain or McPain, as I affectionately call it, candidacy. But, you know, I tend to be a classical liberal myself. I refer to conservatives as my closest cousin. But when I look at the field and try to be objective, I don't see a statesman in the bunch. And so I say, okay, who can at least tread water and keep us where we're at so we don't slide anymore? And that's how I arrive at Newt, and it's certainly how I repel from the other candidates.
While we're talking about that kind of politics, if you let's broaden the field. If you look around the total kind of political landscape, is there anybody that you should say, if I could just have, you know, my wish and everything else went away, who would you like to have seen as the GOP nominee come November?
You know, Stefan, I don't really see anybody, but the sad part about the way media and our society works is that it causes the people who could truly be great leaders to pass. And what I mean is, first off, you mentioned about how the different candidates have risen to the top and slid to the side. And for me, watching the electorate blow back and forth in the wind like river reeds reminds me a little bit of herding cats. And the media is doing the herding. And so I refer to them as a fair-weather electorate. And if you look at it as a potential leader, someone who really could be a great statesman, you'd have to pause and ask yourself, why do I want to put myself and my family through this, knowing that the media, if I'm actually good, the media is going to try to destroy me. And the public doesn't look deep enough to see beyond the superficial sound bites to make a real honest determination. You know, as much as I rail against Ron Paul, one of the reasons his people are so loyal is, to their credit, they actually read the Constitution and have a passion for what he's saying, meaning they're not just glomming on to a sound bite. They believe it. And the electorate in total doesn't. They're not supporting somebody because they believe in what he stands for. And to try to pick somebody because we think he might beat the opponent, that's just not good enough. And that rationale has got us in the position we're in America.
Exactly. And, you know, we think back, I like the comment, I think, and it was new to, you know, was being asked, well, you know, why would you, why do you think you're the right person to vote for? And he said, well, you know, let's look back and see. And you know, we have a B actor who was in movies with chimpanzees, and he got in and turned out to be such a great president. You know, you can't really know. I think he was the most unlikely candidate, and yet he turned out to be very good. Same thing, I think, here. We, you know, there are people there. I think it's easier to see who's not going to be really what we want rather than point at someone and say, yeah, that person is going to be exactly right, because nobody's perfect, on the other hand, as well. So, you know, which of their faults is going to weigh heavier? That's a very difficult thing to do. But I think obvious traits, as you said, like the flip-flopping and the moderate approach, that's easy to point and say, you know what, at the end of the line, that's not going to work.
Well, you know, in the early debates, when Romney used to be waiting for whichever opponent was speaking, and they would do it, the cameras would go from candidate to candidate, Romney would invariably be sneering, literally glaring with locked jaw. And I thought, you know, that's really not a statesman. It just isn't. But one of the things I am hoping we get out of this election cycle, ironically enough, does come from Rand Paul, because the man does have some exciting ideas. Even though I don't support him for president, he reminds me a little bit of what Barry Goldwater was able to do for the Republican Party. So even though Goldwater lost, he reinvigorated a party, and the party was able to build on that and come up with a candidate like Ronald Reagan. So I think that we may be halfway across the swamp, and maybe this primary and this election cycle will provide us something to stand on for future times.
Well, and to be honest, my concern there would be, and I think, you know, that's a good idea, that, you know, we could have that kind of reinvigoration, but we have to have someone now who beats King Barry, because I don't think this country can afford another 4 years of King Barry, because, you know, it's going to be somewhere between your story and mine. If he does get in, I think it would get very, 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 very bad, because I think we'd go ahead.
I was going to say, imagine what King Barry would be like in a second term, knowing that he'll never have to win another election in his life. If he knew that he had absolutely free will as president, with no political might to stand in his way, he could potentially be what everyone fears he already is.
Agreed. Or, you know, to, and I kind of delayed it until Eric Holder came to power and then basically changed the Constitution to have unlimited power and no term limits. Or who knows, that could even, and originally when I first started on my story, it was actually going to happen in this second term. But I thought, no, that's probably just a little too soon. I don't think America would be quite ready for that. But, you know, after it would be, let's see, 2012, so after 2016, whoever comes to power then might very well have the opportunity to do that and, you know, get rid of term limits and just make themselves president for life and all of that. So,
well, it's certainly a possibility. When I did the math stuff and I came up with 2029, but I also paused because, I understand that people like Holder and Obama, they know that a great crisis could change their entire future for them. I say a great crisis. If something dramatic happened that they could spin into a reason the public would buy into, not to have a transfer of power. And they're the type of people with enough ego to try. But on the other hand, Giuliani tried as mayor of New York. So let's just not leave Obama on his own. There are people in our party that would take the same mentality.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's and some people talk about the October surprise. Some people talk about Glenn Beck's talked about a Reichstag moment, and that sure. In of itself is a possibility, and be interesting to see, because I know your current book doesn't really go into too much detail other than apathy, etc., how we actually got into the situation that we are now. So I think the prequel you were talking about, there's lots of opportunity there to detail it out, and that would be very a very interesting story as well. So those things could happen, but who knows?
Right. The original Before the Printer Printed book for America's Final Beginning had a prelude, and the opening sentence to the prelude was, "America and the world degenerated into a state of tyranny following a brief era akin to a second Weimar Republic." And to me, Stefan, that's where we're at right now. We're in the middle of a second Weimar Republic, but on a global scale.
Yeah, and that could be the one, as you said, that if this did develop and the economies collapse, and Greece, Italy, and Spain are definitely poised to start some of the dominoes falling, and if they if enough fall and it reaches America, then I'd almost say all bets are off. Who knows what might happen?
Well, even here in America, where we've got, as I write here, and it inevitably sacrificed liberty in a selfish attempt to sustain itself. And when you look at our national debt, that's what I was thinking of when I wrote it. It's not sustainable. So if we all nod up and down saying yes, it's not sustainable, but we allow it to be, we've got to ask the next logical question of, when it collapses, what will our situation be? And I don't hear a lot of people actually saying, what would happen if it collapsed? I think that's an important question to ask.
Yeah. Other than, of course, all the people who talk about food storage and weapon storage, and I keep seeing more and more postings on the web, and it's amazing how, I would say, in the last 12 to 9 months, their frequencies has gone up tremendously. Of the people who talk about the SHTF moment, and making preparations for that.
Absolutely, I've even seen cable television commercials for exactly what you're describing.
Yeah. So for food and of course, we've been bombarded with the gold adverts, which is okay if there's a partial collapse, but at a certain point, as your book points out, if there is a total collapse, then even gold is not going to have that much value. And especially not gold bars. Maybe you can maybe do a little bit with gold coins at a certain point, but really, food and water are going to be that's going to be gold, basically.
Right. Well, I operated under the premise that under a complete collapse, there's no bartering or trading going on except on a very local basis, and I believe on a local basis it'd be canisters of water and food rather than a television set or a radio or a block of gold. I just don't think that that's going to be. Now, at some point thereafter development, as redevelopment, certainly, but the concern is what happens the first 60 or 90 days. Gold, I don't think, will be of value. Food will.
Yeah. Okay, well, Mike, I have to say thanks to you for coming on tonight. And just once more, if you'd like to give the name of your book, remind folks they can get it on which of the different online websites. And
absolutely. Stefan, thank you very much for having me. Again, my name is Mike Hewitt. The name of the book is America's Final Beginning, and it's available at Amazon.com and also at Barnes & Noble, or Google it, and you'll find it all over the world. Thanks again, Stefan.
Yep. Okay, well, thanks for coming on, Mike. And I just want to add to my listeners, Mike kindly gave me a copy, a draft copy of the book to read. I couldn't put it down. It is riveting. And there are parts there that are just, that definitely could happen. It's just such a frightening thing. So once again, thanks to Mike for joining me tonight. Next week, another author. Just wanted to let you know, and I see that he is in the chat room tonight. John Hancock with Liberty Inherited is his book, and also he sent me a copy of the actual book this time, not a draft, but also a very good book. It's historical. This is not a novel. This is not not fiction, but very interesting, and especially very interesting for me because it has some connections back to both my British heritage, but a few of my listeners know I also have a connection to a little country across the water from Great Britain called the Netherlands, and that also figures a little bit in the book. So I rather like that book. So looking forward to talking with John next week about that book, and sort of talking about prequels. A very short description might be it's sort of a prequel to the War of Independence, the first American Revolution. Perhaps we should talk about it now, thinking of Mike's book, the first American Revolution, and a very interesting book, so I'm looking forward to that as well. So I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight, whether you're listening live and in the chat room. Sorry I couldn't spend much time in the chat room. I'm on the road again, and I need to do some things with my technical equipment, but hopefully I can get that sorted out, and also a little bit of problem at the beginning of the show. Apologies for that, but anyway, and do join me next week if you can. It's going to be fun with John Hancock. I think he's just about to start. There it goes. So it's time again for TTFN. Ta-ta for now, and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Patriot Come Lately Show. Please take what you have learned and share it with friends and family. Better still, tell them about the show so they can listen too. Remember to support the advertisers on the show. It helps keep this show on the air, and I thank you for that. I'm looking forward to joining you on the next show. Until then, keep spreading our message. Goodbye, and God bless America.